We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
But first today, I'm looking at the news feed, and we do have an agreement in the United States Senate, a very rare agreement, a bipartisan $2.2 trillion emergency stimulus package that everyone who voted in the Senate, Republican and Democrat, voted affirmatively. And one of those people who voted affirmatively, who was in on the negotiations, is our Senator Tim Kaine, the former governor of Virginia, and he's joining us this morning. I really appreciate you coming on the air. Tell me where we are. What's in this bill? What didn't make the bill? What are the details here, sir?
John, thanks. Yeah, so the bill is big. I mean, it's more than twice the size of the stimulus package that Congress did after the 2008-9 fiscal collapse. So the way to look at it is it's five pillars. Support for individuals, and so that is a check to be sent out to individuals who are making less $75,000 or less, get $1,200, then it phases down to $95,000, double that for a couple, couple, and enhanced unemployment insurance, as well as some protections from eviction and foreclosure. So that's support for individuals. Second is support for small businesses. Mark Warner worked really heavily on this piece of it. About $350 billion in forgivable loans to small businesses. The businesses can qualify for the loans, and if they keep their payrolls up, keep people employed, then the loans will be forgiven. There's some additional small business provisions as well. The third is relief for sort of big industry sectors or larger businesses. And that is a sizable package support for airlines and hotels and restaurants. The Treasury has great discretion in allocating that, but there's an oversight board, an inspector general, and full transparency about where the money goes, as well as some limitations on things like stock buybacks and executive compensation. Fourth pillar, support for state and local governments whose budgets are really getting hit hard. As you see an increase in unemployment insurance, as you see more health care expenditures, school closures, there's budgetary effects to that. That was a piece I worked on a lot as a former state and local official. And then the fifth piece, we're calling a Marshall Plan for our public health system. Major investments in hospitals, clinics that are dealing with this challenge so they can get the equipment that they need, so they can bring on extra staff, so that they can figure out ways to provide child care. One of the challenges, John, that I worked on with Todd Young of Indiana is we want our health care workers to go to work, but with schools closed, many of them have kids, and then they're torn between do they stay home or go to work. We need to bump up the child care development block grant funding so that our healthcare workers and first responders can stay on the front line. So those are the big five. There's things that aren't in there, or there will be details we got wrong as we worked quickly with a sense of urgency. And that's why though this is going to be the biggest bill we'll do for COVID-19. It will not be the last bill.
The paper quotes you as saying this was some of the most difficult negotiations you've ever been associated with. And I do give you credit. I mean, you have been the mayor of Richmond, you've been the governor of Virginia, now you're in the U.S. Senate. You have a lot of experience with some practical issues that maybe some of your colleagues in the Senate who are more philosophically driven may not have full experience. What made this so tough negotiation-wise? Were you all really at odds, Republican and Democrat, on these pillars?
John, as soon as I say this, you're going to get it. Obviously, the stakes are really high because people are suffering right now, and the dollars are really, really big in this package. And we wanted to act with a sense of urgency, so that would make the negotiation challenging under any circumstance. But we're all used to negotiating, and the normal way you do it, the normal way you close deals, is you get in the same room together. a lot of this we couldn't negotiate this way because of the social distancing. We have colleagues who are coming down with coronavirus 19 or their spouses or staff members. And so this was the first negotiation like this I've ever been involved in where a lot of it had to be done by teleconference and email or in small groups, or if you get into a room, everybody had to sit far apart from one another.
Interesting.
So you, if you just imagine the normal negotiation, if you're trying to do something this big, this consequential, and do it with a sense of urgency, and then you add to it the social distancing that, you know, everybody's worried about COVID-19. So that added an element of real significant challenge to it. Now, I will say the way Senators McConnell and Schumer sort of dealt with that is they broke it into, again, these pillars, smaller pieces. And they said, you know, this committee, you work on the state and local government support. Another committee, you work on the health care piece. And so you kind of broke it into pieces and negotiated the pillars, but then trying to fit the whole thing together. Did we miss something? And look, we're going to see as we implement it, I'll be candid, as we implement it, and not just this bill, but the first two that we did, we've done three major pieces of legislation on this in the last 2 weeks. We'll see that there was something we should have included, or there was some detail where we, you know, we would like to adjust it, you know, hotter or colder a little bit. Some of that we can do administratively, but some of it I suspect we'll have to come back into a fourth bill just to fix some of the things that were made difficult by the speed with which we were working and the social distancing that we needed to follow to do these negotiations.
I'm not going to ask you to trash one of your own people, but when Nancy Pelosi got involved in this from the other chamber on the other side of the Capitol, the House of Representatives, it sounded like, based on the reporting, that she had a laundry list of kind of second tier items that are very important to your core constituency within the Democrat Party. But didn't she kind of mess this up, at least in the short term? I hope you all have purged this larger bill from some of those social justice warrior issues.
My test on it was everything in here has got to be related and have a very direct relation to coronavirus response. And I will say both Democrats and Republicans, you know, tried to add things that, you know, hey, I like that, but that's not related to coronavirus response. There were folks trying to, you know, fix the, you know, plus up the shipbuilding account in the defense bill from the budget that the president just submitted. Well, shipbuilding is great for Virginia, but that doesn't have anything to do with coronavirus response. So there was a need in the Senate side as well as dealing with the House. And then the House will grapple with that in the days to come. There will be people who will want things, and it won't just be Democrats. It will be folks on both sides that aren't directly related. I think we did a pretty good job of purging everything out of this bill that did not have a direct tie to coronavirus response. The one thing about Speaker Pelosi getting involved that was helpful is, you know, if you look at the timing of this, Leader McConnell basically put out a GOP proposal at the end of the day last Thursday, so now just 1 week ago. Democrats and Republicans in the Senate negotiated Friday and Saturday and moved a long way down the field. For some reason I'm still not completely sure about, Leader McConnell then introduced the more partisan version on Sunday rather than the one that's sort of being negotiated. But then we use that as the basis for negotiation. But the good news is once he put that bill on the floor Sunday, we did include the House. We brought Speaker Pelosi and the House folks in so that we wouldn't just negotiate a Senate bill and then find it had real, you know, challenges over on the House side. So the good news is I think we all have confidence this bill is going to the president's desk. The speaker's going to bring people back tomorrow, but the administration, you know, basically as soon as the deal was announced 2 nights ago, the administration can start to plan to implement it. You know, how do you get the checks out? How do you do the expanded unemployment insurance? And because we brought the House into the negotiation, we were able to reach a deal that we know will get to the president.
I'm looking at this $1.5 billion in federal aid that Virginia gets, and that comes as a block grant so that Governor Northam and the administrators in Virginia have a lot of latitude about how they spend that.
Yes.
Is that the best way to do this, you think?
Yes. So the Virginia will get funds in a number of different ways. There is this block grant, as you say, of $1.5 billion. There's also funding to some localities in Virginia, and then some of the health spending on Medicaid or the unemployment insurance bulk up will help Virginia as well. But on the block grant side, here's why we did it that way. And again, Mark was really involved in negotiating the two pillars, small business support and then large business, and I was really involved in negotiating two pillars, the health care support and the state and local. Most states, for example, have seen significant costs on the education side. Mm-hmm. Switching to online means that many K-12 systems and universities have to invest and bulk up their capacity to deliver content online. Colleges are having to refund money back to students, you know, for room and board expenses that they prepay. So there's some costs. But in each state, that's different. The costs of K-12, the costs of higher ed, how you allocate it between school districts or universities, public and private. There's just not a simple formula for that. So we decided that the best way to do the funding to the states was to give governors flexibility. And that was certainly a message we were hearing loud and clear from the National Governors Association as well as from Governor Northam.
Yeah. I know you're not a Donald Trump fan for obvious reasons, going back to the last election and some of the things that have happened in the last 3 years. What's your assessment of his leadership during this crisis?
So let me work backwards. His Secretary of Treasury, Mnuchin, really worked hard, and Schumer really acknowledged how hard he worked to get us here. At some point, you know, it's not just Democrats negotiating with the Senate GOP. We have to negotiate with the White House. What will you sign? Mm-hmm. And so I'll give Mnuchin credit, and I'll give the president had some very talented people. Dr. Fauci, the guy who runs the infectious disease department at NIH, is, you know, I think just about the best in the world. So there's some really good people who are working really hard on this. Bluntly, though, we lost 6 to 8 weeks at the front end of this pandemic because of the president saying we didn't need to worry about it. We had it under control. The media was blowing it out of proportion. The Democrats were blowing it out of proportion. A lot of people don't realize, John, that the first case in the U.S. came about the same day as the first case in South Korea. But South Korea immediately got on it, told their industries, hey, look, we're going to start producing masks and equipment. We're going to start producing test kits. So when you look at a nation like South Korea, and they were able to do mass testing, and they have the equipment and supplies they need, and we don't, I think it's really shocking. And a lot of that was because time is of the essence in this, and we basically had 6 to 8 weeks of the president saying it wasn't a problem before he then said in March, yeah, this is a problem, we've got to get on it. So
that wasn't just a public PR
of the response.
Mm-hmm. That wasn't, excuse me for interrupting, that wasn't just a public trying to gain the confidence of the public while other people were working behind the scenes. You really think that his team was taking a cue from him and not hustling? Or
yes, there were wars within the team. There were some who were saying, hey, we have to hustle, but there were others who were not. And you'll see, you know, reporting about pandemic plans that were on the shelf that were not used, pandemic exercises that showed the administration months and months ago that we really have some weaknesses. So, I mean, just to get into it, what happens is when South Korea realizes we got a case, it's only one, they just really start to ramp up testing and the purchase of equipment. The president says, well, we have five cases, but they're all going away. We don't need to worry about it. There wasn't a sense of urgency, for example, about going out on the market and buying as much personal protective equipment as we can. Mm-hmm. There wasn't the urgent message to our industries, hey, we got to produce testing kits, we have to do this. Americans are used to being tested. You go to your doctor and you say, I think I have the flu, I think I have pneumonia, I think my kids have strep throat. Here, Americans can't do that, even as they're watching on TV while other nations are doing mass testing. So and testing is a way of reducing your anxiety. Even if you're told you have flu or pneumonia or strep throat, it's not good news, but at least you know what you have, and then you can take steps to deal with it. Not knowing is a way, it basically really accelerates the fear and the anxiety, and we just lost the first 6 to 8 weeks. Now, America has the capacity, once we put our mind to it, we've shown this again and again, once we focus, we can go faster, farther, better, you know, than anybody else, and I think we are focused now, thank God.
Well, yeah, I think everybody is focused now. And I've kept you a little longer than we agreed to, so I appreciate your latitude on that. U.S. Senator Tim Kaine, the former governor of Virginia, one of the two Democrats representing Virginia in the U.S. Senate, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
John, glad to talk this morning. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.